My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Russell. It is great to be here with you guys. I'm just really, I just love being at AA meetings. I just love this stuff. This is great stuff. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, and I'm sober a bit, and it's just, I just love this stuff. I love being with you guys. I go to Bible study tomorrow morning. I love being with those guys, and I go to lunch with a lot of my sponsees, grand sponsees and sponsor, and I love being with those guys, and this is what I love to do. You know, I'm a lawyer by profession. I got a law office and everything. I think my wife thinks I'm retired or something because I spend all my time in it. I don't even know how it happens. I peek into my office every once in a while and make a few bucks, and I go to AA meetings. I have no idea how that works out, you know, but it works out. This is what I like to do, you know, and being with you guys and being with people who are just trying to do this thing and put this thing together and trying to figure out what this thing is all about. And, you know, I don't know everything. There's a lot of I know a lot. Let me tell you something. There's a lot of stuff I don't know. I'm like these guys in the big book, you know, who said that we know but a little. You know, they write this whole book. This whole fellowship is based upon. We talk about Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson. And at the end of the book, this whole thing that we base our entire thing on, he says we know but a little. They didn't even know that much. They just knew a few things. But the few things they knew, which were not even things they made up. This isn't even original with them. They all start out reading the Bible and going through the Oxford Group movement and everything like that. And, of course, if you ever become a student of the Bible or stuff like that, which they were, you know, you'll see that most of this stuff was taken from that book. And, you know, you don't have to be a Christian or a Jew or something like that. I'm sure there's a lot of other religious books that have a lot of these principles in them, too. But these principles have been around for thousands of years, you know, and you know, of course, when you're an alcoholic like me, when you think the way I do, you're not going to base your life based upon your principles. It's all going to be based upon lust. Now, most people, I think, you know, now let me tell you something. This is just my deal, my story. You understand? This is just AA and the God of my understanding reflected in me, talking about my experience that says you don't have to buy into any of this stuff. You know, the way we do it in AA, the way I did it ever since I was brought up in AA is they take some poor old timer, some guy who's been around for a while that doesn't look like he's crazy, looks like he's doing okay, and they set him up in front of a group of people and says, okay, tell me how you did it. And, you know, AA is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. And, you know, I know I may not be a wrench tonight, but I used to go around and look at guys like Eddie Edwards or Joe Snyder or Ray O'Keefe, and I would used to go through their step series. And I think 90% of the time, I didn't even understand what the heck they were talking about. But, you know, if I'd walk out of a meeting, I'd get, like, one thing. I might get, like, one thing. I might get anything. I might get one thing that they said, like, 3 weeks later. You know, but it was, like, just something, you know, because when I first came in here, my life was such confusion. Not only on the outside, on the inside. I was so confused that I needed help. I needed somebody. Because, you know, let's face it, the fellowship is wonderful, but, you know, it's also filled with some confused people. There's a lot of stuff going on in here. And, you know, I needed somebody, a man, a woman, somebody who seemingly had put something together who could tell me something that could cut through the fog. And so I was on the hunt. You know, it says if you want what we have and are willing to go to anything to get it. So obviously, then you're ready to take certain steps. You're not even ready unless you want what we have, unless you have a we, unless you have a person or a group of people. I mean, you know, Dr. Bob, you know who he had? He had Bill. That's all he had. He had Bill. And Bill actually later on had Dr. Bob. And then if you read Dr. Bob and the good old timers, all the people that surrounded them, they didn't put him on pedestals, but in a sense we sort of do. We watched the people that went before us. They would watch Bill, and they would watch Dr. Bob. And then people would watch them, and it's sort of like handed down from generation to generation. You know, and that kind of stuff. And so that's how I learned about this deal. That and being honed into the way we're supposed to be by life. You know, life is a wonderful, you know, God has a way of disciplining us and getting us in shape and teaching us what's right and teaching us what's wrong. You know, did you know that? God has a great way of doing this thing. He disciplines us. He just pounds the crap out of us until we get it right. See, most alcoholics, if they think like me, they think if they're going through troubles and turmoils and bad times and they're scared and they can't sleep at night and their life is a mess and all of a sudden, they think that's a problem. That's not a problem. That's part of the solution. The problem is when you can go along drinking, raping, robbing, and doing whatever you want, and living life any way you want, and not suffering any consequences. That's where the problem is. That's when you break down as a human being. The way you grow up is when you focus on God, when you focus on this deal they're talking about in there, when you don't drink, when you don't go to your baser instincts, when you don't follow your instincts, and you try to live a principled life in spite of the fact that you're broke, in spite of the fact that you're lonely, in spite of the fact that you don't have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, in spite of the fact that you got cancer, in spite of the fact that your life is falling apart, in spite of the fact all this stuff is happening, you go ahead and do it, and then somehow on the other end, all of a sudden you grow up and you're not an 11-year-old kid anymore, you know, in a 40-year-old body, all of a sudden you're like an adult. And it happens, not in spite of, it happens because you're going through the problems. And that's why it says in the 12 and 12, it says the way we get a new perspective is by repeated humiliations, final crushing of our self-sufficiency. That's why it says we begin to see that the suffering has value, that we used to do anything to avoid problems, lie, cheat, steal, make up stories, the checks in the mail. I'll do it tomorrow. I was there when you weren't there. Just telling lies, not picking up the phone, not answering the mail. You know, avoid, I can't go to that party, he's going to be there, she's going to be there. I screwed this one, I hurt that one, I owe that one money. Running away from problems and thinking that you're getting away with something as your soul slowly deteriorates. That's the life of an alcoholic, being an excuseaholic. And lusting for things to fill that emptiness that things will never fill. It's all about lust. You know, most people, when they think about lust, they think it's a sexual thing. It's not a sexual thing. It's lusting and coveting anything in this world, things that will not really fix you. And I was really, what I really was a lustaholic. I was a lustaholic when it came to alcohol. You know, as soon as they removed the alcohol, it was cars, it was women. It was anything I was looking at that I thought was going to fix me up. It was a job. It was anything material that I thought was going to fix me up. And it never, ever worked. Because anything the government can tax, take away from you, or somebody can fire you from, ain't going to work. It's got to be something permanent that you can have and you can base your life upon that nobody can ever take away from you. You can turn your back on and you can give it away. And that's what this whole program is about. It's going to teach you to basically live your life based upon something that nobody ever can take away from you, and it's solid as a rock and it's the truth. It's based upon the truth. And, you know, how did I even discover this thing? It's because I saw people, you know, thank God there are people that make it. You know, we talk about people, and there are people that don't make it. There are people that stay sober, and they're bouncing off the walls. There are people that slip and slide. But thank God there are some people, you know, it says many are called, but few are chosen. There are some people that actually make it. You know, they get to what Bill Wilson was talking about, emotional sobriety. You know, they just have that, you know, he said the real problem was unhealthy dependencies. And so I'm going to read a few things from the big book. You know what I like? You know, it's all repetitious. It's nothing new. It's all just reading the same stuff, just sort of looking at it differently. And the one thing about reading, one thing I learned about alcoholism, and I've told this story many times before, I'm not sure I'm going to go through the whole story. It takes 5 seconds. But it basically illustrates what I'm talking about. The story about when my first wife, one axiom I know about, you know, first of all, we're crazy. You know that. If you don't know you're crazy, you just haven't been sober long enough. You know, but you know what happens is we stop drinking. Now that's a relief. Everything's okay. We're going to be fine now. And 6 months later, we're sucking our thumbs and going crazy, saying, now I know why I drank, because we're nuts. You know, we say, you know, I know I'm an alcoholic, but I think I'm crazy too, which, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. You understand that, you know. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, discontented, bipolar, nuts. Unless they get again experience that's ease and comfort, which comes up once by taking a few drinks. So why do we drink? We drink because sobriety is a real problem for us. We celebrate sobriety. We give chips out for sobriety, but sobriety is the problem because to be sober and alcoholic means you just ain't fit for the planet. Whatever insulation those normal people have that allows them to deal with traffic jams, we don't have. They probably, I don't know what a normal person thinks about in a traffic jam. You know, he probably thinks, well, you know, this is unfortunate, but you know what happens, you know, and I think I want to kill everybody. Why is this always happening to me? Everything, I take everything personally. I'm, you know, I used to tell my sponsor I'm sensitive. He says, no, great artist is sensitive. You're just touchy. It's the way I look at things. Everything is about me. Everything is about me, me, me. All I care about is me. I don't care about anybody but me. I may look like I'm trying to help you. I may look like it. I may think I'm a nice guy, but believe me, it's all about me. You just scratch the surface. It's about me. I dated some gal. I was in love with her. You know, alky love. You know, alky love. Take the prisoner. You know, lock her up. And, you know, it also has to do with always doing what I want you to do. You know, and you know, alky love means you've got to obey, do everything I want to do. Never. I was in love with her for a year. She came from New Jersey, you know, and for a year I saw it day and night, night and day. You know, that true alky stalking love, you know. You know, texting. You know, we didn't have to. God, I wouldn't know what I would do if I had text back then, you know. Texting, you know, I mean, it's, you know, you're always thinking about her. She's always thinking about you. You know, we think that's love. We really, alkies think that's love because you just focus on one person all the time, 24 hours. That's sickness. That's being sick. You're setting yourself up. You're making that person like a god in your life. That's like a dependence, like a god. And so what happens as soon as they look the other way or turn the other way, there's jealousy, there's fear, there's anger. That's sickness. You know, that's as much alcoholism as drinking. And I would focus on the gal, focus on the gal, focus on the gal. And then one day she told me that her parents, who had been, you know, financing her education, thought it would be a nice idea that for Christmas she could come up and maybe spend 3 days with them. And so she told me that. She said, you know, for Christmas I'm leaving. I'm going back up to New Jersey to spend 3 days with them. And without missing a beat, I looked at her and said, well, what about me? And I'd only had her, like, for 360 days. You know what I mean? What about me? And she left. She had to leave. And so I flew up after with her. I called her on the phone. I'm here. I'm here. Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. Sickness. That's it. And I did that sober. I made all those decisions. I said all that stuff cold stone sober. You don't need alcohol to be an alcoholic. You can do alcoholic crazy things, selfish things, and self-centered things. You don't need alcohol. The only thing alcohol does is allow you to live with your sorry self when you feel so bad. And it eases the pain. Alcohol is really the cure. The reason why we don't want to give up the alcohol is it's the only thing that works for me. Otherwise, I'd be sitting here sober. I'd be wanting to blow my brains out. You know, so if you don't have the alcohol, you're looking for something else. You're looking for a love affair. You're looking for anything to solve the problem of feeling crappy about yourself and other people, and you don't even know how to solve it because you're using the same brain that's killing you, because all you're doing is sitting around comparing your insides with other people's outsides. You know, what does he have? What does she have? I'm doing great. And the same mind that's telling you you're winning and you're doing great is the same mind 5 minutes, because you're measuring yourself by what's going on in the world and all the crap, all the billboards they got out there. That's the same mind that tells you 5 minutes later you're doing crappy now. Because you don't have it. You can be the same person, because all of a sudden, because you get fired from a job in a bad economy, all of a sudden you're a piece of crap. You were great before when you had the job. When you were vice president of this, you were great. And now 5 minutes later, you're fired. Now you're a piece of crap. But that's how we are. That's a, you know, we're like at the mercy of whatever happens out there. And I'm just naming just a couple of things. It's basically like life kills us. We just are not fit for life. We're just, this is like the wrong planet for us, you know? And it probably affects normal people the same. I mean, I've met a lot of normal people that come to AA and do different things and open meetings, and they love it. And it probably affects normal people. It's just that they don't drink and die. You know, they're just miserable. They just live lives of quiet desperation. We live lives of quiet desperation, and we like drink and die. You know, and, you know, listen, you know, you can drive in this town, and they can't arrest you for driving while depressed. They just don't do it. They don't say, we're pulling you over, we noticed that you were depressed, and, you know, blow on this depressometer, you know what I mean? You know, they don't do that. They arrest you for driving while, listen, if they arrested people in this town for driving while angry, driving while depressed, I'd be wealthy. That's an idea. Driving while crazy, driving while mad, driving while, how about this? Drive while feeling sorry for yourself. I'd be a multi-gazillionaire, you know? It'd be great. And you know something? I think that could be measured, you know? Because I sponsor a lot of people. I can tell people when people are feeling sorry. Just get them out of the car and ask them a few questions, you know? You can't do this to me. You don't know who you're dealing with, you know? I know my rights, you know? You just clunk them over the head, take them to jail. They're depressed and crazy, you know? You know, they're all out there. You know, but we need to find a different way to live. So the way we find to live and live the good purpose and live a wonderful life is because we base, this is a book that tells us we got to base our life upon faith in God. You know, we're on the 11th step now, so I don't have to worry about newcomers running out the door or anything. Like, well, they can run out the door. Where are they running to? They're running back to that old life, you know? The bottom line is I can talk about the 11th step. We've been through the third step. We've been through all this stuff. I don't have to prove anything to you. That's what this is about. I mean, unless you don't understand English, you can read the English language and see what it's about. The benefits are unbelievable. The benefits are unbelievable. Drinking is like nothing. I mean, it's nice not to drink, not to want to drink, and lose that obsession. That happens like the first week or two, you know? That's nothing. It's a good thing. It's an important thing. I don't want some old fart in the back room saying he's saying it's like drinking is not drinking is important. It's very important. Big deal. It's a big deal. It really is, you know. A lot of assholes not drinking, you know what I mean? It's also a big deal to live a life and be responsible and have kids and grandkids, and even if you don't have that, to have people around you that love you and care about you and people you're helping and feeling good about yourself and other people and living a life of it. It's also a good deal to live a life of quality, you know, instead of feeling sorry for yourself and having a chip on your shoulder and always talking bad shit about other people behind their back, you know, and being restless, irritable, and discontented, but, you know, picking up them medallions. That's a good thing, too. I'll tell you what's good, experiencing much of heaven and being rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. So, you know, the story I started to tell you, is, you've heard it before about my wife, first wife, says, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Looks me in the eye, says, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Very simple statement. You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Didn't want to fight, she just walked away, just thought I'd tell you. Everything that was important to me, my house, my wife, my child, everything, on the line. She looks at me and says, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I'm like, whatever, 25, 26, 27 years old. I get in my car. I'm a division chief in the state's attorney's office, a pretty smart guy, you know. And, you know, listen, I would have told you how smart I was if you asked me. I would have told you how smart I was if, even if you didn't ask me, you know. And the bottom line is, and, you know, so I'm, you know, I graduated law school. I pretty much understood what the words said. I wasn't drunk when she told me that. I wasn't drunk when I heard it. I got in my car and I drove to the first light, and I remember thinking, what the hell did she mean by that? Well, because when an alcoholic hears or is told or reads something he doesn't like, it confuses him or it gets him mad, and he makes it go away. And so even though we have a big book here, even though we have a large book here, don't be surprised if 90% of the stuff you won't hear until you're 11 years sober. 11 years sober after having the crap eaten out of you, after slipping 18,000 times, and not understanding, not getting this, all of a sudden you'll read something, it'll mean something in the book, and you'll say, that thing, I've read that a million times, never mean anything. And then all of a sudden it'll mean something, it'll click with you, and all of a sudden your life will change. Because there is stuff in here that you will read that seems religious, you know, it's stuff, it seems like a little biblical, it seems like a religious thing, and you will say, I don't want to read that, and you'll go on to the next thing. It sounds a little more psychological. You know, something a little more scientific, puts you in charge a little more. Anything that puts you in charge so you can figure out your own psychology, you know, the kind of crap that you used to do would go to the psychologist. What's wrong with you? You know, your whole life. What's wrong with me? Why do I feel the way I do? Why has this happened to me? How can I make myself feel better? All that crap that never worked, that you are addicted to doing, addicted to thinking your way into sobriety. I mean, the God thing is fine, but let's face it, you know, when you got real problems, you got to try to figure out what's going on. I know it says we can't manage our own lives, but the point is what we really want to do is manage our own lives. I know it says no human power can solve our problem, but what we really want to do is find a man, woman, or somebody to solve our problems. I know it says God couldn't win if it was sought, and that's good, but let's ditch that thing. Let's go on to the next. Let's do a fourth step or a fifth step or get a sponsor. Find a sponsor. A sponsor will cure me. I mean, sponsors are important. But sponsors are important so they can lead you to the one that's really gonna save your ass. A good sponsor doesn't want you to ultimately rely on them. A good sponsor wants you to rely on God. He's pointing you towards God because that's what this book is pointing. That's what they're pointing you to. That's what the 11th step is about. Have you read it? It talks about a relationship with God. That's what the book talks about. So all I do, it's kind of goofy. All I do is I read the same crap over and over again every single meeting. And there are people that actually say, man, that was... I have people that come up to me and says, man, when you said that thing, you mean when I read that thing in the book? He says, yeah. But it's the way you read it. And I know what they mean. What they mean is they read it, but they didn't really read it. They heard it, but they didn't really hear it. It was like when my wife said, you come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. I heard it, but I didn't really hear it. I heard it, but I didn't really understand it. But if you're an alcoholic, you have a way of blocking people out and blocking things out that you don't want to hear. And it's the things that are going to save your life, and you block it out. And you say, those meetings don't work for me. Because you're not listening, because you don't want to listen. You know, because you want to keep on running your own life and doing it the way you do it and make believe that just because you're at an AA meeting, you're actually doing something when all you're doing is AA light. I'm going to read a couple things in the book, and I want to tell you a little story. It's just a little story I was thinking about this morning. You know, I'm 62 years old, and I don't know how it is with you guys. I think it's maybe I'm pre-Alzheimer's or something. I don't really know. But, you know, I guess I've lived this life for 62 years. I've probably been to thousands and thousands of meetings, sponsored hundreds of guys, you know, just had a lot, large AA experience. You know, every night for me is like different people, different experiences, you know, line upon line, precept upon precept. How many people have I spoken to in AA? How many people have spoken to me that have gone into my being who I am today? And I don't remember all of it. You can't remember it all. I remember drips and drabs and things. There are certain things that happened 30 years ago. I remember like it was yesterday. And then there'll be 10 years that I don't remember at all. And then the next thing I'll remember, just sort of little snippets of my life that you sort of remember. You know, these are certain things that I'll just remember stuff that, about my life that, you know, it's that I'm sure there's a lot of things that changed me that I don't even remember now. I remember when, this is about 35 years ago. You know, I've been sober 31 years. So this is about, I think it was around 3 or 4 years before I even got sober. And it was after my divorce, and I was living in a, was living in Kings Creek Apartments up here. I don't even know whether they're still up there or they're still there.
They're still there.
They're still there. And there was a gal living next to me who was a legal secretary. I was a young lawyer. I don't even know how old, I was 35, I don't even know how old I was, 30, 20, 29, 28. I'm not even sure how old I was, but 27, I'm not. And she said to me that her boss was had his car in the shop and he needed a ride and wanted to know whether I could give him a ride. I don't know what it was. I don't think she had a car or whatever it is. Or maybe he used to pick her up, whether I could give her boss a ride, who was a lawyer down here, you know, much older than me. You know, he's in his, like, 60s or 70s. I guess he was, like in his 70s or something like that. And I said, sure. And so that morning I went over to pick him up. And, you know, I was out there doing my thing. I was like a young alcoholic, you know, doing my thing, you know, trying to amass a fortune and become famous and rich and wonderful. And, you know, you guys would elect me president of the universe. And, you know, I would make my mark upon the world. And I was going to pick this guy up. And the guy I was picking up, we went to see, she was telling me about him. He ended up being one of the top lawyers in the state of Florida. One of the top guys in the state. You can't even call him a top lawyer. He was like a legend. He was like a legend if you in the state of Florida. He was a guy who, you know, spoke to the governor. You know, he was like the governor's lawyer. He was like the top deal. You couldn't get any higher than this guy, you know, as far as reputation, as far as who he was and what he was. So I'm going to pick this guy up. You know, he doesn't know me from Adam. I'm just a young lawyer, and this is his secretary. And I go up to this house. Beautiful house, you know, somewhere around the Gables or something like that. And this old guy comes out, and he's, you know, when I say old guy, he wouldn't be old. I wouldn't call him old now. He's probably around 77, 78 years old. My sponsor's 83. He's got like 53 years sobriety, you know, but I wouldn't call him old. You know, at 62, I don't call 80 old. That's like a young man, you know. So I went and I picked this guy up, and he gets in the car, you know, and I'm driving him, and he's, you know, sitting in the back seat, I think, and I start talking to him, and I don't know what to say to this guy. You know, I'm doing what I usually do, talking about myself, you know, and you know what else he's doing. I'm talking about me. And so I happen to ask him, you know, what's with his car? You know, what happened to his car? And he says, well, it's in the shop. I said, it's in the shop. He says, I'm getting it fixed. You know, it broke down. It happens every once in a while. He says, you know, it's 12 years old. And you know, I couldn't really put that together. You know, there's a lot of things that you run into in your life that you can't put things together. I mean, this guy was, there's no question that he's a multi-gazillionaire. He's got all sorts of money. He lived in like a mansion, everything like that. And it turns out he had like he drove around in a 12-year-old Cadillac. It was 12 years old. And he drove around in it, and if it breaks down, what he does is he fixes it. I mean, I'm not kidding you. He fixes it. Now, for me, if, you know, you got to change the tires, that's a good reason to get a new car. You know what I mean? If the radio's not working, you get a new car. You know, I live a life where my whole life was about getting things, putting stuff in my life, getting a new car. And I couldn't even afford it. I lusted after that stuff. I knew I had to have that stuff. I lusted after it. And I couldn't even afford it. But that wouldn't even stop me. I would steal money from, because it is stealing, when you use a credit card. Or you use credit to, you know, I say it all the time. You know, I used to spend money buying things I didn't need, with money I didn't have to impress people I didn't like. You know, I mean, I used to live a dishonest life because even if I couldn't afford it, if I could afford just the payments, okay, or even I couldn't, I would somehow, I lived a life of wishful thinking. You know, well, I'll get it now, I'll sign the thing, I'll figure out later to pay it or not pay it. And that's why no matter how much money I made, and I made a good living, I was always in the hole because apparently if you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. And I didn't really understand that because all I understood was my lust for stuff. I had a habit. And so when I ultimately got sober and I said to my sponsor, I had money problems, you know, all of which was caused by me, you know, he would say, I got the solution, you know, earn more, spend less. And I want to know about option three, you know, option three, borrow it, steal it, inherit it, get it from somebody else. Somebody's got to get, the world's got to take care of me because I was lusting after stuff. Let me put it this way. I was an alcoholic. If you're an alcoholic, before you come in here, you cannot envision a life without drinking. You can't envision a life. You run into a guy and he says, I don't drink. First of all, you don't hang around with him. Secondly, you think he's crazy. And thirdly, you're thinking, like, how do you do that? Because I couldn't envision a life, I don't know about you, because I couldn't understand people who didn't drink. Why would somebody, how could somebody not drink? I couldn't not drink. You know, as I'd say to a guy, you know what the guy said to me who got me in the AA? You know, he looked at me and he says, this is what, you know, I used to have a lot of people tell me I shouldn't drink, or I got to cool down the drinking, or you got to stop drinking. And of course, I wanted to tell him, how do you do that? Screw you. What are you, crazy? Because I couldn't, my whole life was the bottle. You know what I mean? Now, the guy who finally got me in the AA didn't tell me I shouldn't drink, or I need to stop drinking. He didn't say that. This is what he said to me. He said it was the most amazing thing in the world. He says, you don't have to drink anymore if you don't want to. I had never heard that. I had had people tell me you need to stop drinking, or don't drink, or don't drink. So do all that. I never had somebody tell me you don't have to drink anymore if you don't want to. It's like a different way of approach. I said, well, I don't want to drink anymore. He says, well, there's a way out. You don't have to. How do you do it? How do you do it? But you know that same thing with the alcohol. Was with cars. That same thing, like I couldn't envision a life without alcohol. I couldn't envision a life without a new car. That same thing, I couldn't envision life without alcohol is the way I envision. That's the way I looked about women. I couldn't envision a life without a love affair, or about women, or without sex, or without. There's probably 100 things. You know, they talk about unhealthy dependencies. There's probably 100 things I couldn't envision a life without a title. Without a sheepskin, without, there's probably 100 things I could put up there that I fought for, that I thought about all the time, which was the centerpiece of my life, that I couldn't envision a life without it, and I had to have them. And if I didn't have them, I was upset or I was depressed, and I thought if I was going to lose them or if they were threatened, I'd feel depressed. I mean, my whole life was running around because I couldn't envision how can you live your life without a new car. How can you live your life driving an old car? How can you live a life without a girlfriend? How can you live your life being alone on a Saturday night? How can you live your life? I needed so much stuff, so many, like a car. I needed so many options and accoutrements, you know, in my life in order to live my life in a decent fashion. It was absolutely amazing. The stuff I needed in order to be able to live decently, and I had to have. That's what I needed, all that stuff. You know what stuff I'm talking about, the stuff you think about all the time. The stuff that you talk about at discussion meetings all the time. The stuff that you worry about all the time. You know, when you're saying, you know, well, how come I don't feel good? How come I'm not rocking? This is all about the stuff you think about. The stuff you think about. I need this relationship. I need this to be. And it's always stuff that you have basically just got no control over. That you're powerless over. You know, and it's just an amazing thing. Wouldn't it be great if you could feel good all the time, no matter what stuff you had or didn't have? Wouldn't that be something? But, you know, it's like the alcohol. I couldn't envision a life without that sort of thing going. I mean, I couldn't understand. So I'm with this guy, and he's obviously can afford a Rolls Royce. He could obviously afford a Rolls Royce, a brand new Rolls Royce if he wanted one. And this guy is telling me that he's got a 12-year-old Cadillac that he likes, and it gets him from here to there, and when it breaks down, he fixes it, and he keeps on driving it. And I'm saying to myself, and I remember this, I remember thinking this, How do you do that? How does he do that? I couldn't understand. How does somebody who can afford to buy a new car drive an old car? Now, that may not seem weird to you. Maybe you're not like me. But when you lust over things, that used to amaze. It was as amazing to me that a person could not drink. You know, it was amazing to me that you could not drink. What was amazing to me is people who didn't have to impress other people. People who maybe had the wherewithal, that they didn't have to live that kind of life. I mean, how do they do that? I couldn't do that. I had to show off. I had to have, you know, the best. I did something new. I knew this, knew that. I had to go. People that could just live their life. They didn't need to have. Didn't need to go to France. They didn't need fancy vacation. They didn't need to. They just sort of like. They were just like okay the way they were. Well, that I didn't understand that deal either. You know, because my life and to be okay was so dependent upon you. So dependent, you know, I was a yes butter, and if only I had money, I'd be okay. If only I had a girlfriend that really loved me, I'd be okay. If only I had a house, I'll be okay. You know, if only I had a new car, I'd be okay. You know, if only I could lose 30 pounds, I'd be okay. You know, if only you could add a million if onlys to that, I'd be okay. I was always almost going to be okay. You know, all I had to do was get one more thing about, and you know something, it never worked. It never worked. And all I think about is why I didn't have this stuff. And so I got this book here. So how do you do that? Is there a way, you know, let me tell you something. You know what I found out? Not only you don't have to drink anymore, you don't have to think that way anymore. You don't have to be that way anymore. Can you believe that? You don't have to be that way anymore. I thought I needed to have a gold American Express card to be okay. You know what God helped me out with that? He took away all my credit cards when I was 9 years sober. You know how he helped me out with that? He took away all my credit cards when I was 9 years sober. You know why he did that? Because I was undisciplined and I spent more money because I was a liar, I was a cheat, I was dishonest. I lived a life I didn't deserve. And so you know what he did? What he did was he took away the credit cards. It was like taking away the booze. You know, I was 9 years sober. I was doing meetings like this. I was doing meetings like this and living a lying life, you know, because it's all about alcohol, right? It's not about credit. It's not about, you know, spending money that you don't have. And you know what he did? This is what he did to me. This is what happens if you're an alcoholic and you don't learn these lessons. You run smack into something called reality. I mean, you can only be delusional. You're selfish, self-centered, be 100 forms of delusion. You only be delusional for a certain amount of time, then you run into life. You run into reality. They took away my credit cards. I went through credit card withdrawal. What am I going to do? What's going to happen? The fear. What if I don't pay American Express and everything like that? You know what I had to do? I had to learn how to live life to good purpose and feel good about myself without credit cards. You know, you're not going to believe this. You can live a life without credit cards. Here's the deal. What happens is when you live a life without credit cards, you can only buy what you can afford. Let me say that again. This is like very strange. I know you're laughing. You don't believe this. This is true. You can only buy what you can afford. In other words, if you see it and you like it and you have the money in your pocket, then you can buy it. But if you don't have the money, then you can't. Do you understand? It's like an amazing. It's amazing. You know what I mean? I was amazed. 9 years sober. I've never lived life like that. You know, I had to learn how to live life like that. Without credit, you know how many things over 31 years I've learned that you can live life, feel good about yourself without? And I thought it was the worst thing in the world that God took that away from me. And everything he's taken away from me has taught me a lesson. Because, you know, when he took that away from me and there was nothing I could do about it, I had to focus on him. And, you know, when I focused on him, you know, I found out that everything was okay anyway. It had nothing to do with me. And so here's what it says. Because you know what it says in here in the 12 and 12? I was looking for it and I couldn't find it, so you just have to leave me. It's in there. It says, true dependence. True independence. Freedom. You know how it says in the promises, you're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness? A new freedom and a freedom from fear. Freedom. You know how it says a new freedom and a new freedom? It's freedom from needing to have that stuff. You know what it says in the big book? It says, having all power He will give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. Now, I want to say, now you don't think that has a practical application. You think that's some sort of fluffy thing. But I want you to understand what this is what it says in the big book. It says, God, who is the highest power, will give you everything you need if you stay close to him and do his work well. Now, either you're basing your life, if you're basing it on this thing, you're either basing it on the lie or the truth. Either this is a lie, and we're the dumbest creatures in the world to even depend upon this, or they're telling us the truth. And if they're telling us the truth, then what it says is, if you're in here, no matter what your situation is, if you rely on God, he will give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. Now, if you believe that, if you get into this stuff and you have faith in that, then all you have to do is stay close to God and perform his work well. You don't have to have $1 million in the bank. You don't have to have a new car. You don't have to have anything. All you need to do is believe in him, stay close to him, and perform his work well, and you will find, I've got everything I need. And other people will marvel. Why is that guy, doesn't that guy have cancer? Doesn't that guy, wasn't he fired? Wasn't he this? Wasn't he that? And you'll be one of those guys that people look at and say, how come he's happy all day? He never seems to be down at everything because he's got everything he needs. Because all he's doing is focusing on him and performing his work well. And that's why when you start looking at that stuff in this book, and that's the thing they're talking about, then you start understanding better the things that we don't even concentrate, the throwaway stuff that we don't even think is important. Then all of a sudden you understand what they say on page 25, where it says, we have found much of heaven, we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed, which is different than we stopped drinking. It's saying we found an unbelievable life. This is the same thing they say when they talk about the promises. This is the promises before the promises. We found a new freedom and a new happiness. That's the same way of saying that. It says the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitudes towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Listen to this. The central fact of our lives today. Yes, I know I read this last week and the week before and the week before. I'll just keep on reading until you guys get it, okay? The central fact of our lives today is the absolute... You know, this is funny. People are saying, well, why don't we get into the real stuff? This is the deal. If you get this, you don't have to get anything else. This is it. This is the great fact. This is the great... You know, when you say, what's the bottom line? What's the deal? This is the bottom line. This is the great... Everything else in this book, every single thing in this book, the fourth step, the fifth step, every single thing in this book is getting you to the point where you can totally understand and accept this. If you understand this, then you understand the secret of the whole deal. It's more than just not drinking. It says even in chapter six, I'm sorry, which is Into Action, I believe. And it says this throughout the book, the same thing. In chapter six, after we do the fourth step and we're about to do the fifth step, this is what it says in Into Action. It says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator and to discover the obstacles in our path. That's what this whole thing is about, trying to get a new relationship with our Creator. That's why it says on page 29 of this book. It says right here, it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's why it says later on in the book, it says, perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God, not upon the car, not even upon the boss, not even upon the job. You know what the problem is when you rely upon a job? Then you have fear about losing your job. Then all of a sudden you sacrifice time with your kids, you sacrifice your soul, you prostitute yourself, you do anything you have to do, things that you can't imagine because you're so scared because of your job. And you sit around the AA rooms, you go to discussion meetings, and you complain about your boss. When it has nothing to do with your boss, it has to do with you being able to say, no, I'm not going to do that, because you're scared. Because your whole life is because your God is your job. Because your God is your husband. Because your God is your wife. Because your God, because your God is something that is less than God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in a world to play the role he assigns. just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. You may think I'm crazy, you know what I mean? But I'll tell you one thing, I may not be perfect, but I'm happy a lot of the times. Because I did that relying on other people thing. And I'm not saying I'm perfect on this, and I never had that problem, but I'll tell you, it's a lot different now than it was then. When all I did was focus on that stuff and having to need that, needing that, I had to have that stuff. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men and women of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate to us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Now, fear is the same thing as anxiety. Anxiety is the same thing as worry. You don't have to raise your hand. Anybody here worry about anything? Anybody here have any anxiety?
No.
Anybody here ever say, I wish I wasn't worried all the time? I wish I didn't have anxiety? I wish I wasn't so fearful? You know, the answer is in the book. I know you think it's ridiculous. I know you think it's not the way you think. I know you're saying, that's the answer. They're giving you the answer right here. You know, that's why they say at the end of the book, envision for you. They say right here. They say, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit some you haven't got. Listen, see to it that your relationship, this is the last page, last thing I say, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. That's what it says. And then it says right after that, this is the great fact for us. This is the great fact. See to it that you know your relationship with him is back. Right. Then finally on this page it says on chapter 5, it says when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. And listen to this. This is what's going to happen. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully. We became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. And it goes, and you know something? It says all that stuff, even in the promises, he is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves, over and over and over and over and over again in this book. And then we go right back to the last thing I was talking about, the first thing I was talking about, where it talks about the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that he lives in our hearts. He miraculously lives in our hearts. That's the whole book. That's the whole basis. You get to the 11th step. That's what your whole job is. Your whole job is once you have that idea of the relationship with God, and why do you want that? Because you don't want to have to run around saying, I need to get a Mercedes in order to be okay. I need a husband in order to be okay. I need a wife in order to be okay. I need to have this in order to be okay. How about being okay right now, just the way you are right now? How about that? What's wrong with that? You know, impossible? You know, that's the same thing you used to say about booze. How can you give up booze? I need to have booze. I can't be okay without booze. I can't be okay without pills. I can't be okay without marijuana. I can't be okay without that stuff. You know, how about if I told you that there's a way where you can be okay no matter what? You know, how about if I told you there's a way that you can be okay even if you're married and your husband is crappy or your wife is crappy or your kids are sick? What if I told you there's a way of being okay no matter what's going on around you? You know, do you believe that that's possible? You know, they said that's possible. I ran into men and women in this program where they have all sorts of problems and they're okay. They're okay all the time. They're fine. You wouldn't believe the problems they have. Cancer, it doesn't even matter. They're okay. They're fine with themselves. That's the freedom. That's the happiness. What good is it to be sober and free of alcohol if you can be restless, irritable, and discontent all the time? What good is it to be sober and free of alcohol if you're going to be worried and anxious all the time and sucking your thumb all the time and being complaining all the time and being mad or angry or upset or depressed all the time? What good is it? How long are you actually going to put up with that stuff before you start drinking or smoking or doing something crazy? It ain't going to last long anyway. It ain't going to happen. And you know what the book says? What the book says, it says, focus on God. Make him the central fact of your life. How do you do it? Well, you know, listen. Obviously, the steps are supposed to drive you there. Obviously, if you stick to... obviously, if you decide, and there are people in here who decide this, that I'm not going to go the God route. I'm going to do AA, but God's not for me. Obviously, they're not going to get that deal. They'll get something. They'll get whatever they get. It'll be a chocolate milkshake without the chocolate. They'll get something. But obviously, the people that throw in their lives this thing and are seeking that thing, if you seek, you'll find it. You know how you'll find it? You'll find it in... You will recognize... If you're focused, I was told a long time ago, it says it really in the book, that God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. If you're craving, listen, every Saturday night I was looking for a gal in a bar. Nobody had to draw me a picture as to where to find them. I knew exactly, I was getting dressed up and I was going looking for them. You know what I mean? Don't tell me if an alcoholic, or if I was looking for a drink. I'm an alcoholic. I know exactly where to go to get what I need. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not stupid. I know exactly where to go. I'm self will run riot. You know, to get what I need to go, I'm the guy who figures out how to buy the car I can't afford with money I don't have. You know what I mean? I'm the guy who figures out how to get anything I want, okay? Even if there's got to be bodies in the wake, okay? Don't tell me I can't figure out. You know something? If I want God in my life, don't tell me I can't figure out where to go to get it. You know, the man and woman you're going to be the next 5 years is going to depend upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. The books you read are going to depend upon who you hang out with. I know if I want to find God, who to hang out with. I know where to go. I know who's talking about it. I know if I decide not to do it, it's because I've decided not to do it. It's real simple. If I've decided to hang around people that are just talking about cars and things and stuff and complaining, that's my deal. That's who I've decided, you know, that's you make a decision as to who you're going to hang out with. It's all over this book as to who these people hung out with and who they became a part of, the kind of fellowship they have and things like that. It's free and available to you. You decide who your sponsor is. You decide who your friends are. You decide, you just listen to what they're talking about, what you're being fed. Because what they're talking about is what you're thinking all the time. You know, you say to yourself, is God the centerpiece of my life? Is that the thing that I think about? And if it's not, you say, well, do I hang around people that are talking about God all the time? Who decides who you're going to hang around? It's you, isn't it? You know what I'm saying? You're the one who makes that decision, right? 7:30 tomorrow morning, I'll be at a men's Bible study. You know why? Because I like hanging out with those guys. You know why? Because they read stuff and they're talking about the thing I want to talk about. I go to AA meetings. You know what I talk about in AA meetings? I talk about this. You know, some guy came up to me and he says, you know, after a meeting, he says, I've been to a lot of AA meetings. I've never heard anybody talk about God in AA meetings the way you talk about God. I never heard that in an AA meeting. And you know what I say to him? I say, that's funny. Every AA meeting I go to, they talk about it. Every AA meeting I go to, they talk about God. Did you know that? Everybody's telling me all the AA meetings, they're not talking about God. Every meeting I go to, they talk about God. Exactly this way. Why is that? How come the AA meetings I go to, they're always talking about God, and the AA meetings other people go to, they don't talk about God? Who makes that decision what they're going to talk about? You make that decision who you're going to hang out with and what they're going to talk about. And you know something? You suffer the consequences one way or another based upon how you decide to talk and who you decide to hang out with. So don't blame anybody else for the situation you find yourself in. It all depends upon what you decide to do. So thank you very much. Next week we'll talk about step one.